Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I am your host. Hey, I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this weekend show, as well as everybody who has been tuning in throughout the week, as I have been really doing my best to keep everybody as updated as I can in terms of what markets are performing well and where the money is flowing. Also trying to take a step back from all this day-to-day noise and understand what some of the long-term trends are. That's what Jesse Felder and I are going to chat about here in the first two segments. Jesse Felder does write the Felder Report. He's one of my favorite guests to bring on a about monthly basis. And Jesse, let's start with the U.S. equity markets, because there's no doubt that these markets just continue to push to all-time highs. There is a lot of optimism out there, and there is a lot of, I guess, money still in the system that is flowing into some of these lagging sectors. But we look at something like sentiment. The sentiment levels have reached extreme bullishness dating back to really early 2018. And if everyone remembers 2017, that's when the markets just consistently moved higher day after day. Not much volatility, just straight up in a, well, gradual sense. Jesse, what do you take away from how bullish sentiment has gotten right now for U.S. equity markets?
Well, I think, you know, we are seeing today nothing less than, a euphoric speculative mania in the stock market, the likes of which we've only seen in 2000, at the peak of the dot-com mania, and probably 1929 before that. Jeremy Grantham's probably one of the wisest market watchers out there. And, he recently told, I think it was the Financial Times, that, yeah, this is now a full-fledged speculative bubble, very similar to those earlier periods. And all those data points would validate that. One that I look at and I blogged about last week was the RIDEX ratio. So RIDEX traders, is a fund family that's been around for 20 plus years. So we have data on when these traders get, you know, super long leveraged funds or super short or what have you. And you can put together a ratio of how much money they have in, long levered funds versus short versus cash. And their positioning has never been more aggressive than it is today. In fact, the previous peak was, as you mentioned, early 2018, was January 2018. We also saw some similar, a couple of peaks that were close to that over the last couple of years that all lined up with the peaks in the stock market. In early 18, again, kind of in the late summer, early fall of 18, before that fourth quarter sell-off, which was brutal. Again, in December-ish of last year, right before the pandemic crash that we saw in March. And so these traders have actually gotten more bullish than that in terms of their positioning. It also comes back to something we've talked about a fair amount together, Corey, which is the trading in the options market. It was astounding to me that in the week, the Thanksgiving shortened week, we saw 35 million call options traded, based on U.S. equities. And in that shortened week, that was a record for any week in history. And that was a holiday week, basically a 3.5-day trading week. And so the amount of money that's been pouring into call options is totally unprecedented. And that ends up becoming the tail wagging the stock market dog, as we've talked about before, where, that forces option, market makers to hedge by buying underlying common stock. And so all of these signs point to a speculative euphoria like, that we've very, very rarely seen before in the stock market.
So in all fairness, though, this euphoria does sometimes go on for a lot longer than people think, especially when it reaches these extreme levels. But the question really is then, how much more money is on the sidelines to come into these markets? Because as much as there's been a rotation trade, there's also been new money flowing into the markets. Any thoughts on this, Jesse?
Well, it's, you know, people talk about this money on the sidelines, and I really don't think there's you know, anything to this idea of money on the sidelines. It's really, to me, more a matter of positioning of a lot of these leveraged strategies that matters more than anything else. And I'm talking mostly about, you know, the short volatility trade, and, you know, so that would be, you know, short volatility in all its different permutations. And so, to me, I would consider volatility targeting, which a lot of insurance companies use to, you know, underlying type variable annuity type products, and paired also with risk parity, you know, which is, you know, massive hedge funds kind of leveraged to this trade, which they're basically just leveraging up, you know, into the stock market and other asset classes, but mainly stocks, as, you know, as far as we're concerned, based on what volatility is doing. So when volatility is coming down, they're levering up. And that's exactly what we've seen really since March, is volatility coming down and all these strategies leveraging up again. And that's really, to me, the primary dynamic behind all of this volatility that we've seen since that 2018 Volmageddon February crash that we saw when the short volatility trade blew up back then. And then volatility came down, they levered back up, and they levered, you know, to the point where they couldn't lever up anymore. And then we had that fourth quarter 2018 precipitous sell-off, a levering up in 2019 before the crash earlier this year. And so, you know, I don't monitor this stuff closely enough to know just how leveraged these trades are at this point. But I think it's fair to say we can guess that after, you know, leveraging up since March, you know, nine months or so of leveraging up, this trade's got to be pretty well levered. And if you just look at the short volatility trade directly, it's pretty clear that they've put all these trades back on.
So then where does that leave us, Jesse? We're, I guess, due for some sort of a pullback, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a drastic pullback, does it?
Well, so I do think it means, yes, we're going to basically, since that 2018, we've seen increasing volatility. We had that Volmageddon crash in February of 18. Then we had a nice rally to new highs. And then that fourth quarter 18 sell-off was even bigger than the Volmageddon crash in February. Then we had another rally to new highs within this broadening pattern, this megaphone pattern that's formed over the last 3 years or so. And then we had an even bigger crash in March, where we took out all the lows previous. And so I do think this pattern, you know, just basic technical analysis would tell you that we're seeing a pattern of widening highs and lows. And we should expect, you know, that it's increasingly probable that the next sell-off, you know, could be as even more dramatic than what we saw in March. And it's, like I said, it just comes down to the fact that it's these leveraged trades that are driving the market now. It's not traditional money flows.
So, Jesse, what are you going to be watching to indicate that this market is going to start rolling over?
Well, you know, to me, I look back at the 2000, what, you know, the last time we had a speculative mania like this in 2000, it was driven by the Y2K fears. And so there was a massive pull forward of demand, people buying computers and software in anticipation that, you know, the rolling over the calendar to the year 2000 might cause a technological, you know, breakdown. And so all those tech stocks that benefited from that pull forward of demand just went to the moon in 99-2000. But then there was a huge, you know, gaping black hole of demand afterwards, where everybody who, you know, needed to buy a computer over the next 3 to 5 years now didn't need to buy one. And so when you saw that black hole of demand materialize, it precipitated the crash in the NASDAQ and the tech stocks. And I think we've seen something similar with the pandemic, where you just think about all these stay-at-home stocks have seen, you know, a massive pull forward of demand, whether it's Peloton or Zoom or any of these stocks, Netflix, Amazon, that have seen sales accelerate dramatically as a result of the pandemic, there's going to be a very similar black hole of demand for these stocks. And when we start seeing the year-over-year sales growth decelerate, it doesn't need to decline, it just needs to decelerate, it could precipitate a significant sell-off in these companies with the valuations have gone to the moon. And so I'm watching these names, and you can see them they've started to struggle over the last month or so as a part of a broader rotation in the stock market. But when these things really start selling off, they are the majority of the stock market. So there's going to be a reckoning. It could be very similar to what we saw in 2001 and 2.
All right, Jesse, I also want to talk about this stimulus trade or expected stimulus that is coming out of the U.S. or out of the U.S. government. A lot of people are looking forward to that sometime next year, early on next year, when we actually get the government issue settled in the U.S. But the recent proposals of the stimulus packages are far less than what they were just a couple months ago. Break down what you're watching here and what's important about understanding what stimulus could come out of the U.S.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that I think probably the negotiations between Nancy Pelosi and, you know, the Senate Republicans before the election was, you know, really going nowhere. And I think the Democrats were hoping they'd win with the Senate and be able to pass whatever they wanted in terms of, you know, stimulus. Now that they haven't won the Senate, or, you know, there's a runoff in Georgia to determine that, but it looks like, you know, there's a good possibility they won't have the control that they were hoping. You know, they're much more willing to, they have to be willing to compromise and work with, you know, Senate Republicans to try and pass something. So what they're talking about now is, you know, $900 billion or thereabouts, which is still very large, but it's nowhere near as large as Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump wanted to pass, you know, a couple of months ago. And so I think that, you know, there are implications of that. I think who knows what the dollar was pricing in, you know, because with the dollar selling off now, you would think that if they're unable to pass as large a stimulus, that would be bullish for the dollar. But it looks to me as if maybe the dollar was pricing in that they would be able to pass nothing, you know, and now that it looks like they're going to pass something, that's net dollar bearish. And that's why we're seeing the dollar roll over.
So do you think the dollar weakness is going to continue then? Because the dollar arguably is breaking down. It's close to breaking down. Let's put it that way. There is a lot of air underneath this level, right around 90, 91 on the dollar index. What do you think about future prospects for the dollar?
Well, you know, I've been dollar bearish for a few years now. The dollar did rally nicely over the last, I don't know, year and a half or something like that. But I think in the short run, I have to temper my bearishness. And really, since over the last few months, I've been cautious towards gold. And, you know, part of the reason for that is that I've thought that we could see a dollar rally. I do think sentiment right now is probably getting too bearish towards the dollar. I think everybody right now, the consensus trade is, you know, for the dollar to continue lower. But if, you know, the stimulus that ends up getting passed is less than, you know, what was hoped by everybody, I've got to think that's dollar bullish. And, you know, if they don't, there's a good chance they don't pass anything still, I think. That's probably a better probability than what people are pricing in now. I mean, with the vaccine news and everything, there's probably a lot less impetus for any stimulus at all. And so I do think that, you know, there's if you look at the futures market too, there's just a massive amount of money that's betting on a lower dollar right now. And so there's a potential that I see for a risk-off period, a sell-off in the stock market that would be, you know, concomitant with a dollar rally in the short run, a short squeeze on all those dollar shorts. And to me, that's kind of what I'm anticipating right now.
So elaborate a little bit more on the gold trade, because gold has been correcting for about four, almost 5 months now. Looks like it found at least a short-term bottom late last week. But what do you think about the prospects of gold maybe testing out some of those recent levels around 1760 again?
I think gold could actually, trade down even under 1700, even to, you know, high 1600s, some point over the next few months. I just think the prospect of rising real yields is just not a bullish backdrop for the gold price. And I do think longer term, the dollar is going it's in the middle of a major bear market. And so that's going to be a net major bullish tailwind for the gold price over time, over the next, you know, few years. But over the next 3 to 6 months or so, I do think gold could continue to correct. It's not unusual in a gold bull market to see, a 20% decline in the gold price. I don't use the typical, 20% is a bear market definition that many people use. But I mean, gold could easily have a 20% correction, which would put it in that high 1600s area. That we saw that in the 2001 to 2011 bull market for gold. I think there was a couple of 20% price corrections in there. And so that wouldn't be unusual at all.
Jesse, real quick, I just want you to elaborate a little bit on that comment regarding real interest rates, because those are key drivers for a number of markets, especially the precious metals. But I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. And what do you look at to get a true perspective here?
Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of people look at implied, real rates or, what have you. I look at, straight up the 30-year treasury yield less core CPI. And when that, when that rate is negative, gold's usually up year over year. And there's such a close relationship, actually, between that real rate on the 30-year and the year-over-year change in gold, that it works as a really good forecasting tool. And when you have real rates rising, like we do over the last several months, it usually means gold's gains are at least going to be tempered a bit, if not reversed. And that's kind of the situation we've been in for several months now.
So then, Jesse, what sectors are you bullish on right here? Where do you see opportunity for investors?
Well, the last couple of times we've talked, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned that I've been just pounding the table bullish on energy. In fact, my fists are hurting from pounding the table so hard over the past few months. Energy had an incredible month last month in November, but I still think it's very, very cheap. And if we are seeing a major bear market in the dollar, that's so bullish for the oil price. And we're still seeing, it's amazing to me to still see such negative sentiment towards energy when it just had its best month in history. And people are still talking bad about Exxon and Bloomberg is still running peak oil articles. These are very rare opportunity you come across. It's very, like I mentioned, I think last time we talked, oil today reminds me of gold back in 2015, late 2015, when it was just completely left for dead. And you have a Federal Reserve that is dedicated to creating inflation. And at the same time, the most hated asset class on the planet is that one asset class that would provide you the best inflation protection, perhaps, out of any asset class, and that's energy. And so I do think energy's only really begun to shine, and this is going to be a multi-year period. The last time we saw this type of bearishness in oil like we see today was 2001-2, around the same time as a great time to be buyer of gold. The gold bull market was just taken off. Energy too, I think The Economist in 2003 proclaimed the death of oil, and they recently just basically ran the same headline again, which to me is very, very bullish. Last time they did that, oil prices just screamed higher for the next several years.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up there. It's always great having you on the show, buddy. I appreciate all of your insights and really just a level-headed look around what's going on in the world and not getting too stuck into any certain narrative, because things are changing quite rapidly right now. And over the next month or two, we're going to see how this vaccine rollout happens in select countries. And if it does go smoothly, then, well, I think we need to readjust some of the expectations for next year as well. But hey, again, a lot can happen. Jesse, it's great having you on the show. Thank you for your time this weekend. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You too, Corey. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.